Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:26 Pacific Standard Time and, Pacific Summer Time. And today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, if we have a review of what's been happening this week and I suppose put it in perspective relative to what's been happening over the last few months, then a short-term oversold condition was replaced by a short-term overbought condition in February, and since the beginning of March we've seen a bit of a loss of momentum, and the stock market is generally pretty much unchanged on the year. Well, the last 2 days we've seen that the Nasdaq has pulled back by over 60 points. The S&P is also looking increasingly like it is going to have a reversion back towards the mean. Well, when we think about just what this means for investors and the people that are looking at this market who still have long positions, well, if you have a long position and you've had it for a number of years, then the justification for that trade has been the fact that quantitative easing is generally has been very firm or very supportive for asset prices generally. Since quantitative easing was introduced because of the deterioration in housing prices in the U.S., it is notable that the housing market in the U.S. is back to an equilibrium level, or back to a market of regions, so that some of the more desirable locations in California, the prices have gone back up and are in many cases above where they were in 2007 and 2008. So that's evidence of asset price inflation. And you also have evidence of asset price inflation in the stock market. The correlation between the stock market and the Fed's balance sheet has become increasingly powerful over the last 2 years. And the conclusion that investors who have wished to stay with the stock market have come to is that provided monetary accommodation remains in force, that the benefit of the doubt can be given to the stock market and that one should buy the dips. Another way of looking at that is if you have a long position and you're worried about potential volatility in drawdowns, then you would be hedging with volatility. So the VIX index is an object lesson in just how an automated trading system is constructed. Well, in 2010 and 2011, people were worried about the impact of quantitative easing being removed. And we had these sharp pullbacks, and that represented spikes in the VIX index. Well, generally speaking, spikes in the VIX generally coincide with buying opportunities. It's a much better indication during a spike for when we get a buying opportunity rather than when it's very low, being a selling opportunity. But on average, volatility has been decreasing and has been particularly inert over the last 2 years. Well, if you're running an automated trading system, you use volatility as a way of dictating just how large your position can be. If volatility is low, then the model will tell you that the potential drawdown is relatively minimal, and that allows you to justify a larger position. But when volatility spikes higher, well, then that suggests that you have to reduce the size of your position, and it's not just suggests, but it necessitates that the position size is reduced. But they'll also be aware that spikes in volatility represent buying opportunities. So we had a sharp pullback in January, and the VIX index got up to about 20. Well, on at least three occasions in the last year, a rally up to about 20 on the VIX has represented a buying opportunity, and really quite a favorable buying opportunity from the perspective of the S&P. Well, right now, following the rally that we had in February, volatility got right down to the lower side of its range, and now it's rallying once more. Well, investors will be looking at potential for reversions to the mean as buying opportunities. Automated trading systems will be looking at a level of around 20 on the VIX as a potential buying opportunity. And the measure of risk in the market will be an average of how volatility has performed in the last 6 months or potentially a year. But that's been in a very inert environment, and particularly when we look at what is possible for the index over the last 5 to 10 years. So position sizes will have been justified to be larger, and the amount of leverage and margin that could be taken on as a result of that will also be larger. One of the reasons that we've had such wild swings in the market is because position sizes are generally large, and that tends to move markets. But what happens when volatility goes above 20? Well, that's going to represent a standard deviation move in terms of what the average has been. That's the kind of thing that starts to send models out of whack. The standard deviation of a move of approximately 5 standard deviations was what we saw in 2008. But that was from a generally, that was also from a generally inert level. I'm certainly not suggesting that we're going to move into another 2008 type environment. We don't have that kind of risk at present. But what we haven't had in over 600 days has been a reaction of greater than 10% on the S&P. Well, that type of event is likely to coincide with volatility pushing out above 20 on the VIX index. And right now we're at about 17.5. So just because volatility has been inert for nearly 2 years does not mean that volatility is always going to be this inert. I think that's really the takeaway. When we look at Europe, well, Europe is generally cheaper than the US on a fundamental basis, but with the events that are going on currently in Russia, with the Russians massing troops on the eastern border of Ukraine and the potential for an invasion increasing, then people are starting to discount what the risk is exactly for Europe, not least because a number of European businesses have got substantial interests in Russia or with Eastern Europe. When we look at the issue logically, then a number of Eastern European countries have joined the European Union. Ukraine was flirting with it, and that was deemed a step too far for Russia. For example, Estonia is a reasonably small market. It's got a PE of about 12 and a dividend yield of over 5%. But it also is not just in the EU, but it's also adopted the euro. So we can consider that it has moved to the center of Europe, even though it's on the eastern periphery. Well, that market pulled back very sharply in here today. Obviously, because the country has got a border with Russia, people will start to become a little bit concerned about Russia getting a bit more expansionist. But how likely is Russia to invade the European Union and indeed the Eurozone? That would represent probably a bridge too far. So we are going to see that there are going to be buying opportunities in Eastern Europe as this crisis unfolds. And what we'll be looking for is signs of early relative strength. Well, in this service, veteran subscribers will be familiar with the fact that we haven't been particularly enthusiastic about Russia for a long time because the respect for minority shareholder interests was pretty much at the low of the lower end of the list of priorities for the administration. So while some people were very enthused about Russia when it was included in the list of BRICS and because of its massive mineral wealth, we were never really that enthused about Russia because of the deteriorating governance, or at least the absence of improving governance. And a mantra with us has been that governance is everything, and not least in emerging markets. But it really is the trajectory of governance that is the most important. So we can say with a high degree of confidence that the standards of governance in Russia are not only deteriorating, but they're at a very low level. So valuations are low, but valuations are low for a reason, because one simply cannot have confidence that minority shareholder interests will be respected. Well, that is certainly one extreme. What happens in India, in the other case, is probably the opposite end of that. Governance in India having been deteriorating, and perceptions of governance and the sclerosis of the bureaucracy were deteriorating for a long time. And the market has been totally out of favor. In fact, the Nifty has basically been trading in a range for nearly 5 years, but that range has got a saucering characteristic. And the potential for Narendra Modi to win the election in the next few months has begun to be priced into the market. So the Nifty is trading in the upper, well, close to its all-time highs. And the currency has stabilized following a devaluation last year. Well, India represents a country where governance could potentially be improving, and that can translate into really quite profound positive impacts for the stock market. Well, Indonesia is another country where the trend of governance improving had stagnated over the last couple of years, and investors started to focus more on the fact that the country was running current account deficits, and the rupiah got down to its lows for the 10-year range in the last few months. Well, Indonesia has got world-class resources, and it has a developing manufacturing sector and a burgeoning middle class, and it experienced some growing pains over the last few years, which contributed to the current account deficit. Well, today it was announced that the mayor of Jakarta was going to be running as a presidential candidate, and he's viewed as a market-friendly personality and someone who could potentially kick-start the trend of governance improving once more. Well, that could be viewed very, very positively in terms of how it was received by the stock market. It is interesting that the Jakarta financials have moved back into a position of outperformance. The financials bottomed way ahead of the wider market on a relative basis in 2008. That ratio bottomed in July of 2008. The wider stock market bottomed in October of the year, and rallied, well, the financials rallied very, very impressively for approximately 18 months before moving into this reasonably volatile range, which pretty much reflects them doing performing pretty much in line with the wider market. Well, they've rallied right back up to the upper side of that range in the last few days, and the potential for the financial sector to break out relative to the wider market once more has increased. So it would suggest that this development in terms of Indonesia's governance is going to be received really quite favorably. And it suggests that the rather difficult environment that has prevailed in the Indonesian stock market for much of the last year may be coming to an end. Well, where the big question rests at present in many, many people's minds with regard to China is just where we are in terms of governance. Is the trend of governance improving or deteriorating? And perceptions as to where that is will vary very much depending on who you talk to. Well, there is an obvious issue with bad loans. One of the reasons that it developed is because local governments can't rely on local property taxes and have relied on land sales instead. Well, they've sold that land to often dubious companies that had no chance of paying it back, but because the loans for the land purchases were from banks that were connected to the state, it was a very happy triangle. Well, the size of the shadow banking system has increased substantially over the last few years, and we're coming to the end of that cycle. So last week we saw the first corporate default in China's history, and since then two more of these investment trusts have missed coupon payments. So we're going to see the resolution of China's bad loans starting to come into sharper focus over the next few months. Well, considering the way the market is structured, we can conclude that the stock market is going to look at which companies are connected to the administration. Those that are not well connected and don't have any earnings are going to be allowed to go to default and go bankrupt. And those that are deemed to have systemic importance for the wider economy or have close connections to the party in Beijing are probably going to have to be rescued. Well, that kind of old boys club, one couldn't regard that as being particularly positive for governance. On the other hand, we do know that measures will be put in place to stabilize growth and that efforts are being made to improve or to progress on the reform agenda. I think it really does depend on what your time frame is, because the system, the old boys network within the Communist Party is not a particularly encouraging sight. The question as to whether it is going to improve or not, albeit from a very low level, I think is positive. So that would suggest that China certainly has challenges in front of it, but that it's probably going to be able to overcome those, not least because the banking sector has got has to hold 20% of its deposit in reserve, whereas Western banks tend to hold significantly lower, usually in the low single digits. And that suggests that they have money to fund the bad loans problem with, but that it is going to require a meaningful change in how the market is represented. Well, when we think about exactly where we are in the wider market, Wall Street has been rallying for nearly 4 years. And so just by that, by virtue of the fact that it has been going sideways for, or well, it has been rallying for 4 years, would suggest that we're at a mature stage. When we look at some additional factors, well, the companies that have done best from quantitative easing are those that have been able to access cheap capital. Well, small caps generally do well in a low interest rate environment. So the Russell 2000 is trading on an a PE in excess of 25. And that is consistent with a low interest rate environment. And we would expect small caps to do well. So that would be an index that would be worth watching for a loss of consistency, because those types of companies will be sensitive to the interest rate environment. Well, it wasn't just small companies that have been able to access cheap capital. Large companies have made abundant use of low interest rates, low absolute yields, and abundant access to cheap capital to retire more expensive debt, to buy back their own shares, and to increase their dividends. Well, the buyback of shares by corporations represents probably the marginal buyer in this market. The PKW Buyback Achievers ETF has outperformed the wider market in really in an impressive fashion for the last few years. We could consider these as the types of companies that have done best from quantitative easing. They're likely to be sensitive to a change in the interest rate environment, because their ability to fund their buybacks is based on their ability to fund debt in the bond markets. So if that sector begins to underperform, then that's likely to be a lead indicator, or at least a coincident indicator, that we're moving out of a medium-term bull market environment. Well, the other type of sector that tends to do well in the latter stages of a bull market are IPOs. And it's generally in the latter stages of a bull market when people are less defensive. A number of the negative connotations that people associated with the market have been forgotten over the last 4 and 5 years. And there's generally never a better time to sell your company for more than it's worth than when prices are high. Well, earlier this week, I posted a number of market statistics with regard to the S&P 500. Not least of those is that there were over 60 shares that were at an overextension relative to the 200-day moving average greater than 20%. And a number of those are in the technology sector, where you have some pretty extravagant multiples. Well, you don't see that type of environment at the beginning of a bull market. That's generally at the end, or at least in the mature phase of the bull market. Well, the other thing that you see in the mature phases of bull markets is that previously unloved sectors begin to stage catch-up rallies. We might also describe these as cyclical sectors. Well, among the sectors that are staging powerful rallies at present are Middle Eastern markets, which were largely absented from the bull market over the last 4 years and have begun to stage powerful catch-up rallies over the last 6 months. And gold shares. Well, gold shares trended lower for nearly 3 years, and a number of the shares are down in excess of 90% from their peaks. On a relative basis, compared to the price of gold, gold shares are back at the levels that they were in 2001, before the gold bull market ever began. So we can conclude that a lot of the write-downs, a lot of the bad news that was priced into those shares last year is already in the price, and the fact that we're seeing gold prices improve and that the low at 1180 probably represents a medium term low would suggest that even if there's potential for ranging, that ranging is likely to be with an upward bias, and that's likely to be really quite positive for gold and gold shares generally, and not least because gold shares are cheap on an absolute basis, but they're cheap on a relative, they're even more cheap on a relative basis. And again, the outperformance of cyclical sectors is, generally speaking, a late in the stage phenomenon. Well, the market, to an extent, was priced to perfection at the end of last year. We'd had a phenomenal advance for the S&P and other US indices in 2013. There's an awful lot of good news was priced in, but what it's now susceptible to is that some bad news coming through. Well, earnings estimates have been finessed to such an extent that the estimates are being lowballed in order for companies to beat them. But profit margins are at record highs. It's difficult to imagine how much greater the margins are going to be. And the political considerations that are currently underway generally mean that there is the potential for a risk premium to be added into these markets, and that's certainly what we're beginning to see in some of these European markets. Well, the fact that you're seeing some of the financial sectors underperform, not least in the UK and also in Singapore, would suggest that risk premia are being increased for some of these markets. So we are seeing that where there is a clear case that governance is improving, then we're seeing that the stock market is being rewarded, but that where there is the potential of political risk, that risk premia are increasing. Well, government bond prices peaked last year, and again, you would expect government bond prices to peak well ahead of the wider market. Well, that does appear to be what has happened. Government bond yields are deteriorating at present, but very much in a range-bound environment for US treasuries, whereas on a price perspective, it looks like we're going to see some of the European bond prices breaking out in here as some of the risk is taken, or as people look for a safe haven relative to the kinds of risk that they're seeing in Eastern Europe. So that would suggest that we're into a more volatile environment, that we are going to see more ranging, and that there are going to be some volatile swings in between. An additional consideration is that the dollar has been particularly weak over the last 6 weeks, and that the Europeans are now starting to talk about the strength of the euro being a headwind. Well, the euro was stronger by an additional 46 ticks in here today, and that would suggest that following 6 consecutive weeks to the upside, that the euro is, the ECB is beginning to look like it wants to talk down the euro But generally speaking, commodities have done very well indeed over the last 6 weeks, and not least in the soft commodity sector, where they've had the catalyst of weather problems. It is interesting that with the dollar beginning to firm, that or the potential for the dollar to firm increasing, that we saw that some of the stronger commodities like coffee and sugar were a bit weaker in here today, and that you do have really quite extreme short-term overbought conditions in some of those contracts, and some consolidation is probably a bit overdue in here. Well, considering everything that's going on in Eastern Europe, we have to consider what's happening with oil. Well, oil prices remain pretty range-bound, and in fact, WTI prices have been coming down over the last week or two. The U.S. has approved the first withdrawal from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in the last week. That certainly contributed to an easing of prices. But generally speaking, what we're looking at is increased risk in related to a country which is a massive producer of energy. And that would suggest that there is a risk in here that we see higher oil prices. And Brent crude today was stronger by $1.18. It's currently sitting at $108.57. And we couldn't be surprised if we see some short-term upward pressure on oil prices. The oil price is a weapon that Russia has at its disposal, and certainly Europe is very dependent on Russian energy. Of course, the Russian stock market isn't taking particularly kindly to everything that is happening in here at present. So perhaps the best case scenario would be that either Putin comes to his senses or he is overthrown. Interestingly, the Russian stock market, having pulled back very sharply in here today, was well off its low and finished pretty much unchanged on the day. It is really quite overextended on the downside. But we're still in a very risky environment. So when we think about where we are in the short term, there are certainly risks. When we think about the medium term, well, the normalization of monetary policy represents a hurdle for stock markets. And that would suggest that a ranging environment and the potential for at least a 10% pullback on the S&P has increased. But when we think about the long term, well, then you look at the last 15 years and the S&P pretty much went sideways for 13 of them and has really just broken out. So a first step above the base is probably our worst case scenario, that we see a ranging environment that could be potentially lengthy, and by that I mean it could last for more than a year, but that the fundamental factors are that there is real potential for productivity growth to materialize in the global economy, that the golden age of technological development is accelerating. And while the last 10 years has focused primarily on the social sphere, that the next 10 years are going to have a meaningful effect in the industrial sphere. And that is going to contribute to impressive productivity growth in terms of industry. Well, technological innovation in the energy sector has resulted in the growth in unconventional oil and gas supplies, which has really been a game changer for the energy sector. Technological innovation is occurring at such a prodigious rate in the solar sector that we already have efficiency rates in excess of 40%, and in the next 10 or 15 years we could get upwards of 80%. Well, that would change the economics of solar cells forever. And that means that the dream of a smart grid really does start to become very meaningful indeed. You really want a return on your energy investment that is improving, not deteriorating, in order to fuel a secular bull market. So that could potentially be a real game changer developing in the next few years. Well, the global population is going to peak out around 9 billion in the next 30 years. Most of those people are going to be in Asia and in Africa, and they represent phenomenal growth stories. Well, if you have an additional, because you're getting an increasing number of countries adopting capitalist economic systems, that generally is consistent with rising middle classes. Well, that means that per capita consumption of just about everything is on an upward trajectory. And that represents a really powerful bullish phenomenon for the types of companies we regard as autonomies. So there are short-term risks and there are medium-term concerns, but it's generally speaking, it is beneficial to be optimistic about the future. And considering the kinds of things that we have out there right now, I think there's very good reason to be very optimistic indeed about the long term. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.